So the union is under greater strain than I've ever seen in my lifetime. That's the view of the de facto Deputy Prime Minister, David Lidington. Let's listen to what he told the BBC yesterday.
The union is under greater strain than I've ever seen in my lifetime. You've got an openly separatist government in office in Scotland, and in Northern Ireland there is more pressure from people in the nationalist community for border poll to look again perhaps at the question of Irish unification. And the demographics in Northern Ireland have shifted compared with where they were 20, 30 years ago. The threat to the union, in my view, comes not just from Scottish nationalism or pressure for Irish unification. It comes from indifference in amongst English opinion to the value of the union. I think there is a sense in which we take the union for granted. And sometimes I think there's too many people in England, including in my party, who assume that you can be dismissive of the contribution that Scotland or Northern Ireland makes. You sometimes hear, you know, you the Vox Pop reaction, oh, you know, we can do without them if they want to go off and do their own thing. Actually, we would be all poorer, we'd be weaker in the world, we'd have a lot less influence if we ceased to be the United Kingdom of Four Nations.
03030805555. Is the union under greater strain than ever before? Or perhaps you think there is a bit of politicking going on here. With me this morning are commentators Nelson McCausland and Andre Murphy. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Nelson, we'll start with you. Your reaction to that clip?
Well, I thought he made some interesting points there. First of all, the point that he made in relation to complacency and indifference. Those are the two words that are coming through from a number of people at the moment about English attitudes to the union, indifferent and complacent. And there is a sense in which in any area of life, you only sometimes realise the value of something after you've lost it, that you do tend to take things for granted because they've been there so long and you can become complacent. That's not simply a matter for the whole of England. It's particularly true, I think, in regard to London. There is a London-centricness about many institutions, and that has been reflected in the detachment between the south of England and the north of England. So there is a point well made there about the need for people in England and politicians in England not to treat the union with complacency and indifference. Because if they really think about it, they'll realise the value of the union. And he also referred to the issue there of Scottish National Party government in Scotland. And there's been an SNP government there since, for 11 years now. 8 of those years as a majority government. And yet still, it seems pretty clear that if there was to be another referendum in Scotland, I don't think there will be, that referendum again would be for the union.
Yeah, but this is unprecedented though, Nelson. Like the de facto deputy PM warning about the very existence of the country that he helps to govern. So how do you think we've got to this point?
Well, certainly we've got the issue there of nationalism in Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland being more active. And devolution has certainly given Scottish nationalism a platform that it did not have previously. I think devolution in Scotland wasn't particularly well thought through when it was first delivered. But for me, the biggest issue is that we have people in Scotland canvassing, campaigning constantly for independence. There are similarly nationalists here in Northern Ireland, Republicans. But we don't see the same amount of zeal in terms of campaigning, lobbying, advocating for the advantages of the union and the strength of the union. And that, therefore, becomes a one-sided argument. So if David Lidington is saying to people in his own party, as he is, and I'm glad for that, if he's saying to them, we need to become stronger advocates for the union, that's a good thing. So it's not just simply unionists in Northern Ireland saying the union is a good thing. That there are folk in London, in the Conservative Party, saying very clearly the same thing. Now, many of them do, but others become quite parochial and think about their own constituency and so on. So I'm glad that David Lidington has highlighted that point. And there are very strong arguments to be made for the union and very strong arguments to be made against separatist movements elsewhere in the United Kingdom.
Andre, does David Lidington have a point that we would all be less well off if the union broke up?
Suppose for people who are engaged in the conversation that's happening on this island about our future, and the conversation is absolutely happening and has been for a while. It's been about how Strand 1 of the Good Friday Agreement has not succeeded in delivering rights, has not succeeded in settling the constitutional question because it has failed. So Project Northern Ireland, to a large extent, once lauded as being where we could all meet in the centre, is failing to deliver. So people who are affected by the denial of language rights, people who are affected by equal marriage or the right to choose, they see those social issues being delivered on everywhere else on the two islands, but particularly the huge changes that have happened in the south. And they're saying, well, if we cannot realise our rights within the constitutional arrangements as they currently are, we will seek another arrangement that can deliver those rights. Then also put into the mix Brexit, where the majority here want to remain in the European Union and retain the rights that they have and the privileges they have with the European Union being denied to them because a majority of people in England voted in favour of leaving, and that their rights and their interests are being repeatedly sidelined with the chaos that's happening in Westminster.
On the topic, Andre, of Brexit, do you believe, because some people, I've heard this say before, they feel like some politicians across the water hold the union as more England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland as a bit of an afterthought. In fact, when the whole Brexit thing was unfolding, some seemed surprised at the idea that there's a border with the EU within the UK. It seemed to come as an afterthought.
Listen, they don't care. You know, the Westminster gave up caring about here quite a long time ago, particularly since this Conservative administration came in, where we could see that they completely abdicated their responsibilities under the Good Friday Agreement as co-guarantors. They allowed the rift that happened in Stormont over a period of time and the poison to enter, where they didn't intervene.
They allowed that to happen. How did they allow that to happen?
Well, I mean, I think if you look back at the incidents where there were crises in Stormont, and, you know, you had David Cameron coming in very late in the day, really not paying much attention, and, you know, the frustrations of the Irish government to an extent, but particularly when Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams walked out and said, you know, we are different here. We have gone through a conflict here. People need to recognise we have a peace agreement.
So by saying they allowed it to happen, it's almost like saying, well, they allowed us to try and sort it out here and we couldn't do that.
No, what they'd allowed to happen was a place where they just abdicated their responsibilities under the Good Friday Agreement as co-guarantors. And you could see that as well with the Brexit debate, that, you know, their responsibilities as co-guarantors didn't even come into the equation and continue not to come into the equation. And, you know, that probably shows its most stark relief with the relationship with the DUP when for self-preservation, they have a pact with the DUP completely at the face of a crisis in Stormont. Absolutely unbelievable that this has happened.
Okay.
They aren't interested. They are only interested in self-preservation. So people who are living on this island will make a choice, and that will be, where does our interest lie? Where will we have our rights delivered? And can we have new arrangements that we can ensure that our economic prosperity, our social rights prosperity, and the future of our children?
Let's go to the phones on this. Let's go to John in Belfast. Good morning, John.
Hello. Nelson has a major problem, and I'm a unionist. I have friends and family who live in England, and they are up. They're raging at Scottish nationalists blocking Brexit apart in Westminster, in Northern Ireland, exception of the DUP. Everyone's opposed to Brexit. Although Wales voted for Brexit, they're also now opposed to it. Why should England not now go it alone? And say to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, see the Barnett formula, forget it. You're on your own. Because England can make it through Brexit.
Do you think Northern Ireland could?
and Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales can just cast aside.
What do you want to see happen?
I want Brexit, but I want the UK as a whole going out in Brexit. I don't want Scotland blocking Brexit.
So what would you prioritise, John, the union or Brexit, getting that the Brexit that you want?
Brexit.
Well, there you go, Nelson. That's from a fellow unionist.
Well, the gentleman is entitled to his view. I would take the view that it's not an either-or. I think that we can actually have both Brexit and the union. And what is interesting there, I think, this morning is just in some of the newspapers this morning, and it's very timely that we're discussing it today, reports there about the emerging controversy in the Irish Republic about the European Union. Because the European Union has is in the process of doing a deal with the South American Common Market in regard to the whole issue of a trade deal which would enable the South American Common Market to introduce vast amounts of South American beef into the European Union, which would be a threat from cheaper beef there from South America coming into the European Union. What effect would that have on farmers across the European Union? And lo and behold, what we find then is that farmers, yeah, environmentalists in the South and indeed elsewhere in the European Union are up in arms about this.
You know yourself,
and
Nelson.
But some
make the counter-argument to that, you know, as a result, you may have cheaper meat as a result.
I'm just fascinated by the two-facedness then of some political parties like Sinn Féin, where you have Gerry Adams now up in arms about this and saying this has to be opposed and this has to be stopped. And the European Union has dumbed down the farmers of his constituency in County Louth. But I haven't quite heard the same demand from people up here in Sinn Féin in Northern Ireland. So this is a much more complex issue than sometimes people imagine. And
okay,
we've had a very feverish debate, very feverish, with Sinn Féin building mock borders of building blocks on the border and people dressing up and doing amateur dramatics on the border and frightening people. And that's why a lot of their debate has been around the border issue, because it is largely a manufactured issue.
There was a recent poll that suggested around 60% of Tory members would rather Brexit took place, even if it meant Northern Ireland or Scotland left the UK. Now, some have played that down, but that's like 60% of Tory members. They're basically saying they would rather have Brexit if it meant the cost of the Northern Ireland or Scotland leaving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The DUP are linked with.
Well, the other main political party at Westminster, if you're choosing between Conservative and Labour, the other main party at Westminster is one that is led by a veteran campaigner for a United Ireland and someone who introduced senior members of Sinn Féin for the very first time.
I know. Well, you could make the argument though there.
I can't make a very strong argument there.
But there's not a lot of choices then for someone that's a unionist and that feels the union is really important that it's kept as is.
I'm just making that observation there, but the main point that you're making there, Vinny, is this. When people were asked in that survey, they were asked a whole series of questions, and they asked, would you put Brexit over the economy and jobs? The answer was yes. That was how they viewed it. And I think that that's a reflection simply of an immediate reaction to a situation whereby people in many parts of the United Kingdom are very angry about the fact that Westminster politicians who are Remainers have worked so assiduously to frustrate the democratically expressed will of 17.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Bill in Stirling. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, Simon Coveney, the Taoiseach, has admitted that there will be a lot of damage to Southern Ireland's economy by Brexit. And we in Scotland will see how much damage there is and know how much damage will be done to Scotland if Scotland becomes an independent country outside the UK.
What would be your choice in that selection?
I would choose to keep Scotland part of a Brexited Britain.
But if it was a case of you're not going to get Brexit unless Scotland is no longer part of the UK?
No, that's a false choice. It won't happen unless Nicola Sturgeon gets a referendum, which will happen in 2021. But it gives us quite a time to see how much damage will happen to the Southern Ireland economy, because we'll be in the exact same position and there will be a hard border between Carlisle and North Berwick.
Let's go back to what David Lidington, the issue he raised of the English indifference to the Union. Do you feel that as a Scottish person?
Yes, I think if England was given a vote on Scottish independence, they would vote for it.
Well, because people will make the argument, Bill, for Northern Ireland that they simply don't want us. Some will make this argument. They don't want us because we cost too much and we cause too many problems.
Absolutely. Scotland's in the same boat. It costs £14 billion a year. Northern Ireland doesn't cost anything like that, but £3 billion or something. But it would get rid of a lot of deficit to the Exchequer if they got rid of Northern Ireland and Scotland in the same position. It would be a lot of deficit we'd get rid of to the Exchequer if Scotland became independent. But they can never come out and say they want Scotland to be independent. But we in Scotland shouldn't be as stupid as vote for it. We're turkeys voting for Christmas.
Bill, thank you. Andre, you know, when it comes to the economy, money, does it not make sense to stay part of one of the biggest economies in the world?
I'll tell you what doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for us to say that we know that on the 1st of November, there is going to be an economic shock in the event of a no-deal Brexit, that we are going to, that every single sector has expressed absolute worry and fundamental worries about what is going to happen to the economy here, particularly along the borders, and that their interests have been completely ignored, completely set to the side with all of this fantasy solution type of nod toward those concerns that has emerged from the Tory party. What doesn't make sense is that we would go headlong into that without putting our hands up and saying, this is not our choice. The majority have voted against this and they have voted to remain in the EU, and that we want to have particular circumstances.
Yeah, but Andre, you know the counter to that argument in terms of the EU referendum. It was a UK-wide one. It was not split like that.
I get all of that.
Yeah.
So then Britain goes and negotiates with the EU and comes out with a settlement where the EU did protect the interests to a large extent of the economy and the citizens' rights that are here in the north. And then what happens? In Westminster, they reject that. They reject it absolutely overwhelmingly because we don't count. And so the message that goes to people here is that our economy doesn't count, our citizenship rights don't count, our social rights don't count. So exactly what benefit does the union provide to us? The only thing that we can point to is our peace agreement and Strand 1 working. And the DUP, through its behaviour, has ensured that it hasn't worked to date. So we need to get back to a place where we ensure that the Strand 1 either starts delivering to citizens or else we are into a very significant conversation about our future relationships in this island.
Let's go to Fra in Belfast. Good morning, Fra.
Good morning, Vinny. Vinny, I just phoned up to make the comment that the Deputy Prime Minister, David Lidington, is absolutely correct. He's just reading the writing on the wall. There will be, undoubtedly, Irish reunification because of the demographics. It's only a matter of time. The Scottish independence movement is growing year by year. I feel the only reason it failed in the referendum was it was a huge kind of fear-mongering around what would happen, pensioners' rights, and the banks were all claiming that they would pull out and relocate in London, and they put a lot of pressure on, like, the grey vote, which is the older generation of people who really didn't know what would happen if Scotland...
Yeah, and people make the argument that there was scaremongering on both sides when the referendum was coming up.
OK, yes, but I'm just saying that I feel that had a huge impact because the older people were left in a vulnerable position of not knowing exactly, you know, where their pension, what would happen with their pension rates, because it had been a United Kingdom and Scotland was pushing for independence. I think the breakup's really only a matter of time because the United Kingdom was never built on consensus. It was built on conquest.
Who do you believe would fund Northern Ireland in the result of our exit from the, if the Union broke up? You know, who would fund the welfare state?
Okay, well, if the union broke, yes, because I think I might have been two separate questions in there. If the union broke up, then obviously we're talking about a united Ireland. And the North.
Are we?
Yes, because surely, I mean, if the United Kingdom breaks up, I mean, you're not talking about like a UDI in Northern Ireland on its own.
No, but the point I'm making with that comment is we don't know and we're not at that point if we ever will be. But that's the point I'm trying to make. So where do we get the funding from? What would you want to do?
Yes, okay. I can't square the circle. If the United Kingdom were to break up, Northern Ireland, to me, would obviously there would be a border poll, there would be national reunification, and going forward it would be, I voted for Brexit, so I just want to make this clear, but I would accept the reunification of Ireland within the EU if that was a price that I would pay politically for reunification, and then I, among others, would campaign for an Irish exit from the EU. But I see Irish reunification as the way forward. How that's funded, I think there's been goodwill through the International Fund for Ireland and different international bodies. I would like to think that the EU, not Britain, but the EU, would help subsidise a reunified Ireland going forward in the same respects that they maybe did with Germany.
There's a lot of hopes and expectations there, Fra.
Yes, buddy.
A lot of hopes and expectations, but not something that you can be completely sure of.
Well, I think if you have a border poll, you have reunification. So let's say that that's kind of guaranteed in my mind going forward. As to how any country manages its natural resources and how it manages its economy is up to the government elected by the people. So it's not like, it may sound like, oh, you're stumbling forward, you don't know where you're going. But, I mean, this is all new territory for everybody, including national reunification.
Okay, Fra, thank you. James and Temple Patrick next. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Vinny. For me, there's a fundamental bit. I mean, a union is about people, and nobody here is that about saying, particularly the unionist community, around how do we engage with the people to get them to either stay in the union or with the nationalist community who want a united Ireland. So for me, as a unionist, I remain to be convinced. But as long as the unionists keep denying people their rights of equality, of fair stuff, and the union at any cost, and Brexit is a real example of that, most people will decide to go where they feel A, most secure, B, financially done, and the union is a decision further down for them. The DUP in particular seem to feel that it's union at any cost, and people will suffer that cost in defence of the union. Most people will look at their own pockets and say, this is not right. You don't give me the rights, you don't give me equality, you don't give me the same level of income, so I'm going to go where I'm best off to go.
Okay, James, thank you. Stephen in Bush Mills. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Vinny. I believe that Brexit will strengthen the union, not weaken it.
You're confident of that?
Yeah, I believe that it will put the great back into Great Britain.
Stephen, thank you. Let's go to William in Belfast. Good morning, William. Is William gone? I think he's just dropped off. 03030 80 55 55. Nelson, last word on this to you before we move on.
I think it's a wake-up call, an encouragement to people to become stronger advocates for the union, and to celebrate the union, and to explain the union. Our biggest market for our goods here in Northern Ireland is across the water there in Great Britain. And therefore, the union makes economic sense for people here in Northern Ireland. And there are points that were made there by Andre and others that would be easily addressed. We had the argument about demographics, and that's quite a callous and cold argument, and one which is quite, I find, particularly unpleasant, because it's just assuming that if a person is a particular religion, they will automatically have a particular politics.
Well, there you go, Andre. Callous and cold.
It's almost...
Well, let's let her respond to that.
Well, I think, 100 years on from partition, to talk about a sectarian headcount and to talk about callous and cold is breathtaking. You know, we live in a place that was formed on the basis of a sectarian headcount. This conversation is going to be entirely different. It's going to be a positive one. It's going to be about how citizens realise their rights. It's going to be about where people's economic future best lies. And it's going to be about something positive which everyone can buy into. So I think with that, you know, demographics play a part in this, but actually people, the real conversation that's happening is about a vision for a new dispensation where people can positively contribute no matter where they come from and no matter what their background is. And it's a really exciting opportunity, particularly for everyone who is British and Irish, who shared a contested place, to be able to build something that is much more prosperous, much more fair, and isn't based on fear.
Okay, last call for this morning.
Those arguments simply do not stack up once you actually explore them carefully. Our economic strength, and that matters to an awful lot of people, our economic strength is as part of the United Kingdom, and whether it be economically, socially, culturally, historically, in every way, our links with the rest of the United Kingdom are so strong that I'm sure the Union will endure for many years to come. Wasn't Gerry Adams going to shave off his beard if he didn't get a United Ireland by 2016? You must be able to find a razor blade anywhere, because it's still there. And thankfully, the Union is still there and will be for many years to come.
Well,
exactly the type of argument that ensures that we're going to hurtle toward a discussion around a dispensation on this island.
When Andre gets a sense of humour, I'm sure she'll appreciate even more the humour of what I was saying there. 9:30,
the news. Nelson and Andre, thank you very much.